This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The best bits of Joy Drive with Em and Warren. No matter where you are, you can always take Em and Warren with you.
It is 17 minutes past five. You're with Em and Warren for your Thursday afternoon.
After a couple of years break, the Logies returned this week with Hamish Blake securing the Gold Logie this year. Now, what do the Logies say about diversity on our TV screens?
Gender, sexuality and pop culture. There isn't much Lauren Rosewarne doesn't know. And if she doesn't, we'll make it up.
Associate Professor Lauren Rosewarne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Now, Lauren, you've seen that photo of that was tweeted by Logie's Insider of six white personalities and had a caption on it, "God bless diversity on Australian TV." Does this pretty much sum up the status of the TV industry here?
Yeah, and this is, I think, the question that has been asked every year, basically, for the last at least decade about whether there is a diversity issue with the Logies. My argument would be the diversity issue is actually with the production and what gets produced on television in Australia. Therefore, the Logies just awards, you know, whatever's out there in terms of content, but you can't suddenly have a really diverse Logies if you don't have a really diverse Australian film and television industry.
Absolutely, because the Logies, I mean, the idea of the Logies is to take the top of the top, the best of the best.
And the creme de la creme, yes.
The creme, I was going to say creme de la creme, and then I was like, can I, will I, and I didn't, but you
I'll
did.
I'll just
so that's
go
okay.
down there, yeah.
So to get the creme de la creme right, and to then have these nominees and then have the winners, there were 55 nominations for Logies this year.
Yep.
Do we know how diverse they were?
Well, in the sense that there were six non-European faces nominated. So in terms of diversity, no, not very. And this is one of those issues where, look, I think there is a number of issues we've got going here. You know, for example, the Australian film and television industry is comparatively small. You know, if you compare it, if we're trying to hold the Logies to the same standards that we did with, say, the Oscars, with the Oscars so white hashtag a few years ago, the industry in Australia is relatively small. We disproportionately make a lot of reality television. Now, the question there is, well, isn't reality TV, given that it's ordinary people disproportionately, why can't those ordinary people look more like us? And look, I think that's a fair question. I mean, something like one in eight people in Australia were born somewhere else. So this issue of why do we keep making these same mistakes, one explanation for that is that television stations are often risk averse, and what we mean by that is they're very reluctant to take chances on things that haven't proven themselves in the market. Now, we could say, well, that's a chicken and an egg thing. If you don't put something in before audiences, how do you know that they don't like it? But there seems to be a template where you'll see the same model, you know, be it a kitchen cooking show or some sort of, you know, house building reality TV show, and that model will be milked until it's dry, as opposed to taking a risk on something new.
Now, Lauren, Tony Armstrong from ABC TV, who's a proud Baron Binyam man, was the first person to actually acknowledge the traditional owners of the land at the Logies. I mean, surely that's a pretty big oversight that no one else
doesn't
did.
It seem quite strange that, you know, it's almost jarring when you hear a first, because I don't know about you, but certainly every public event that I've been to in the last 10 years seems to do an acknowledgement of country. It seems odd that we haven't had it at a televised event like the Logies. And I guess this is just one of those examples where the people who make the decisions are not going to be people, you know, generally it's going to be a room of white men disproportionately, and therefore those issues aren't of greatest concern to them. It's not as though it's one of those examples where it's, you know, this kind of subtle institutional racism, as opposed to anyone deliberately being awful. Rather, it's the neglect and oversight that you see playing out.
We're chatting with Associate Professor Lauren Rosewarne from the University of Melbourne about the diversity or lack thereof on TV screens, certainly here in Australia. Lauren, you mentioned that it's, you know, the studios that are trying to play it safe in a sense. Does that mean that some of this has to do with the audience? Like, is it the audience's fault that it's not more diversely cast on our TV and film?
Yeah, look, this is one of those tricky things because If you want a more diverse film and television industry, you need audiences to tune into those productions. It's kind of like the discussion that we've had around, say, Wonder Woman. You know, that question of whether you can have a woman at the helm of a superhero film. Well, what decides that is the audience. And if the audience goes and sees the film, that then tells the studio that it is worth making these kind of films because there's an audience for it. I'm not sure that we've had examples where Australian audiences have somehow rejected non-white faces and therefore that said to the networks, never, ever, ever have a more diverse audience. We don't get that level of diversity of content to make that choice. So then the burden is on the audience. Do the audiences then boycott programs until they are more diverse? And I think that's a really hard ask for audiences, because if you do that, if you say to audiences, you've got to, you've got to boycott Australian content that's not diverse, what that then does is have viewers tune into non-Australian content, and we don't want to do that. We don't want to cripple an already difficult industry to make money in. So what you need to do is create incentives for networks to try new things and be more diverse. And that's a hard ask. I mean, you know, it's the streaming services disproportionately internationally that do take more risks, because their model is not about advertising dollars. Rather, it's a subscription model, and the networks in Australia don't have that luxury.
Mm. Lauren, it's really interesting you say that, because we're obviously talking about the commercial networks. I was watching ABC TV News last night, and I was pleased to see, you know, two Asian presenters, yeah, one presenting a finance segment, and of course Danny Tran, who's a court reporter, doing the weather in the evening. So I'm thinking there is a role for our public broadcaster here, isn't there, in terms of, yeah, setting a diversity standard?
Yeah, and SBS similar. Mm. And I think that something that can be said for the ABC that's very, very different to, let's say, the US model is America doesn't have a public broadcaster the way we have one. They, you know, yes, they have PBS, but that's a subscription model, much like community radio, for example. Whereas the idea of a publicly funded broadcaster on television, much like, say, the BBC, even though they're slightly different in terms of how they're funded, I think that says to us that at least there is scope for a model that is not 100% reliant on advertising, you know, that isn't reliant on advertising dollars in the same way. So they get to take more risks and to be more reflective of the audience. Because I think that's the other thing that we need to make a point here. I'm not asking for this out of some sort of goodwill social engineering mission. I would just like our television to look like the people that live in this country. And that, I think, is often glossed over because it sounds like we're just trying to be uber politically correct, as opposed to actually have an industry that reflects the population.
Absolutely. And I do think that your point about streaming services was really valid, because I feel like of the people I know, majority of them are watching like 90% of their content on those streaming services. And they do have a lot more diversity, as you mentioned, but they have the freedom to do that.
Absolutely. If you think of the biggest leaps and bounds in terms of, just as one example, queer representation in film and TV, it's the streaming services that have done it. And part of the reason that that's happened is because network television is beholden to audience sensibilities and, you know, different kind of things in terms of, we don't want to offend anybody and all those various legacies of old school television. Cable TV started to change that, but streaming services, because of shaking off the shackles of being beholden to advertising dollars, means it doesn't, they don't need to worry if Palmolive doesn't want to run a commercial during my explicit television show or even just my cutting edge television show. Rather, the subscription model means that there is more flexibility to try new things. And if they work, great. If they establish an audience, it's kind of that sort of perfect capitalism model. If it finds an audience, it gets a second season. If it doesn't, it's dumped. And Netflix is notoriously harsh as an example of dumping shows that don't get an audience, but at least it got tested.
Lauren, always good to chat. We'll talk to you again next week.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
Associate Professor Lauren Rosewarne from the University of Melbourne, and Lauren joins us every Thursday here on Joy Drive.
Joy Drive with Em and Warren. Follow us on Instagram or Facebook at Joy949Drive.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.